welcome to another episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson, along with Joe Favorito, who is actually calling in today from Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City, where there's a lot of sports activities this weekend. So, Joe, tell us what's going on in Vegas before we introduce our guest.
Right. So, hello, everyone. Welcome again. It's been an interesting 24 hours, and by the time you guys are listening to this, you'll know whether there is a current or a new UFC champion, which is one of the fights going on this weekend with Conor McGregor trying to defend his title on Saturday night at the MGM Grand. But in addition to that, this kind of confluence of testosterone-driven sports has USA 7's, the global series of what will be the Olympic teams for rugby, rugby 7's this summer in Rio, are here for a crowd probably over 2 days at Sam Boyd Stadium of about 80,000 people. And then you lop on top of that something called NASCAR, which is at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. So you've got, you know, a massive audience, and somehow there's some amateur hockey tournament too, literally going on. And I'm staying at the Monte Carlo, and Vegas obviously going on a, you know, kind of a transformative run. The new arena, which is going to open next month, I kind of walked into yesterday, and that's pretty impressive too. So, you know, Vegas is becoming, in addition to the kind of gambling UNLV Sin City hub of sports, it's really becoming, you know, an interesting place for big events of all different kinds. And this weekend, it all kind of ran together. And one of the reasons it ran together, by the way, is this UFC fight was supposed to be the one at Madison Square Garden. Some people may not know that MMA is illegal still, pro MMA. The only state in the union that is illegal in all forms is New York. The UFC has been fighting that for years. They decided about 6 months ago to kind of boldly throw it in the face of the governor and the legislature and say, hey, you know, we're going to plan a fight at Madison Square Garden, a massive fight with Conor McGregor, and they thought at the time was going to be Ronda Rousey, although she lost to Holly Holm, who's fighting in the undercard tomorrow night. And as time went along, things didn't move on the legal front. And 3.5 weeks ago, the UFC announced they were not going to try and stage the fight in New York, had to move it to Las Vegas, put it back in MGM Grand, and it will probably be sold out tomorrow. And it is close to being sold out at this point. But, you know, like I
said,
Joe,
that was only 3.5 weeks. They made that decision 3.5 weeks ago.
3.5 weeks ago. Yep.
Wow, so that's incredible. Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I happen to be watching a lot of the sports media over the last 24 hours, and that little prelim clip of the McGregor fight was, I think, of course, it went viral. You guys probably saw it. Pretty dramatic squaring off between the two fighters. It's incredible. The other thing I noticed that I was hoping it might be available over the air on Fox, but actually it's a pay-per-view. So anybody's interested is going to have to step up and pay, I think, either $40 or $50. Actually, $50 or $60, I believe. They're selling it in high def as a high def option or as a standard option. Anyway, let's move on with the show. And by the way, if you notice a little bit of change in the audio, it's because this is actually a call-in version of the show. We've done the others, the first 10 episodes, in person, face-to-face. So that's a different tech today with Joe in Las Vegas. But we're really pleased to have a special guest today to help us understand the world of data and how it applies to sports. It's a big, big topic. So we're pleased to have Nick Katsumpis, who leads the sports vertical for IBM Watson Ecosystem. I've had the pleasure of knowing Nick for about 6 months. He actually visited our Columbia Sports Digital class last fall and was a huge hit, the most popular speaker I think I've had. So we started that class at Columbia. He's a wonderful guy. So Nick, welcome to the show. And we'd love to start off with an overview, particularly for our listeners, on what's going on with IBM Watson Ecosystem. I think at this point, everybody knows the name from all the advertising that's been done by IBM, but I think a lot of people might still be a little bit confused about what that means exactly. So what's your take?
Definitely. Well, first of all, thanks for having me here today, Tom. I'm very, very excited about it. You know, Watson is one of those big brands that you see the commercials and you know about Jeopardy, but, you know, really not many people can say what it does. And what it comes down to is Watson is a cognitive computer that understands natural language. And what we call this unstructured data. And normal computers can understand structured data, so the rows and columns and the numbers, but Watson can actually understand how we communicate in our words and understand the context and be able to answer questions and reason just like you or I would in a normal conversation. And this was the basis for how Jeopardy went down in 2011 and from that, we built out a business in 2014. And this Watson Group was great. We were building complex and very expensive solutions on the enterprise side. But when we built out the ecosystem, our goal was to really expand and scale out this mission of cognitive computing. I mean, we view this as something that's transformative in the industry. And we sort of took a step back and said, you know, if we want to build out in numerous verticals and expand our expertise, we need to rely upon the developers and expertise of others who are in this space. And the ecosystem's mission is to work with startups and other earlier stage companies and allow them to use this idea of unstructured data, natural language processing to build cognitive applications. And specifically, I focus on the sports vertical, but we're allowed to, you know, really expand our vision and see any company out there that wants to build within Watson.
And Nick, when you talk about the unstructured data, right? So let's just give some examples for everybody to help clarify that point. What you did in our class, for example, with that presentation was outstanding. I think everybody got it fairly quickly when you showed some of the graphics, which we don't have the luxury of showing right now in the podcast. So could you explain that a little bit more?
Absolutely. So unstructured data is anything really that is not the numbers. So it can be social media, it can be email, it can be essays, medical records, images even. I know we're making a big push right now in our image recognition and video software. So it's all this data that was previously very difficult for normal computers to understand. Now Watson can understand these things and start to provide insights and really new insights that we haven't been exposed to before.
So would an example be, I know I've seen, I think we've all seen the Bob Dylan commercial probably about 5,000 times on television. It's a fun commercial, and they talk about actually sorting through all his thousands and thousands of pages of lyrics, obviously quite quickly, and you know, understanding the sentiment of what he was about in his songwriting. Is that kind of the idea when you look at that unstructured stuff?
Exactly, and the Bob Dylan commercial is a great example of that sentiment analysis, but we have over 32 APIs, which are essentially capabilities that we put on our developer cloud, and they do numerous things. One of my favorites happens to be personality insights. I come from a psychology background, so I find this very fascinating. And what it does is it takes anything that a user has written. It can be an essay. It can be a set of emails. It can be social media data. It was actually trained on Twitter. And from this information and based upon the rules and laws of psycholinguistics, Watson can create a 52 characteristic personality profile for an individual just by taking a Twitter handle. And when you think about the applications of this, you know, in any industry, but in sports in particular, but the ability to micro segment, understand who your audience is as a person down to an individual characteristic, it's just providing all these new levels of insight that teams and startups and athletes themselves are starting to recognize.
So you can take someone's aggregated collection of tweets and run it through the system and find or determine 52 different characteristics. What are some examples? Anger, agreeability, like what kinds of things?
So it was trained on the big five in psychology and personality. And these big five are broken down into other individual characteristics. So you might look at challenge seeking. You might look at gregariousness, agreeableness, emotional range and values, and all these come scored in a percentage form.
Wow. Okay. That's fascinating. And then scary. With that, yeah, it's a little bit scary. And then another part of it probably is, I assume you mentioned, I think you made reference to this, facial recognition or kind of the use of video, the use of this in the video context to determine specific unstructured elements that might be happening in a moving image. Is that right?
Exactly. A good example of this, we actually did a really interesting partnership with the TED organization and the TED Talks. And we had Watson read all the transcripts from those talks and also analyze the videos themselves. And Watson became really good at recognizing who was speaking and what their ages were, what their ethnicity was. And then they could also look for specific queries of what that data looked like. So instead of asking a very broad question and getting 10 different videos that were all 20 minutes long, Watson would pull out all the specific concepts and pieces from those videos and compile them in a very personalized way based upon the transcripts and that video data. So it's a really interesting way of combining two forms of unstructured data.
So in the case of TED, is it so it's effectively reading the body language as well as the actual words spoken?
Not necessarily the body language yet. I'm sure we're working on that in our research, but our vision is definitely getting there.
What about voice inflection and things like that? Is that factor in?
Yeah, voice inflection is getting there as well. We have a way around that just because the tone and specific inflections are very difficult and complex for a computer to understand. I mean, these are things that we take for granted on a daily basis. But what we've trained Watson to do is take the speech, convert it to text, and we actually just announced a new API at Interconnect, which is one of our largest IBM conferences in Vegas. It was the API was called Tone Analyzer. And what Tone Analyzer does is it goes through anything that is written, and in a similar vein to Personality Insight, it extracts the specific tones and emotions that are being expressed. So, you know, if I'm going to write an email to someone that's pretty sensitive, I might run that through Tone Analyzer, and I actually have done this in the past, just to see how my words and how my linguistics are coming off in terms of that tone.
Wow. So before we press the send button, I guess we got to be careful, Joe.
Yeah.
go ahead, Jeff.
So a couple questions. One is, what if you're a bland personality, and how does that play out? As I guess that could be an issue for people who don't have much of a personality or a poker face. The second thing is, can you kind of walk us through how this is monetized, or how IBM would use it as a platform for business going forward, as everybody looks at this, how do these things make money? And then the third thing, and Tom, it'd be great we haven't talked about this, but somebody asked me this morning, is do we have any idea of how big, in terms of a dollar figure, or has anybody seen what the analytics business in sports actually is today? Is it already a billion-dollar industry? Is it a multi-million-dollar industry? Is it even quantifiable?
Well, that's a great question, Joe. Nick, can you answer that?
that's tough. I think you know, it's definitely in the multi-million-dollar industry just from an athlete performance perspective. But what I found unique in my conversations with some of the professional teams and leagues out there is they're now applying those same principles of analytics on the performance side to the business side. And this is something where, you know, other industries like finance and retail, they've been there already. And sports is now discovering this world of fan engagement and stadium experiences and looking at data in new ways to enhance whatever experience and whatever dollars they can make from fans actually engaging with content and being in the stadium. So I'm not surprised that number is rapidly increasing.
Mm-hmm. So how does Watson make money, I guess? And then
wait, I want to hear the answer to the question about someone who has a kind of a bland personality. In other words, doesn't offer much up in the way of unstructured kind of data value, so to speak.
That's a great question. So I guess if you have a more boring or bland personality, Watson's going to reflect that. I think the value in using a tool like this is the ability to show how you are similar or different than others. You know, maybe all the people who have bland personalities like, you know, a certain player or are attracted to certain types of merchandise or consumer behaviors, and that's where, you know, you can find the value, because it's not about necessarily what kind of personality you have, but how that personality correlates to specific behaviors from a fan context.
Right, especially in the, I guess, Nick, in the context of more sophisticated CRM, like, you know, customer relationship management in sports. I'm sure that's a topic you've gotten into in some of your biz dev meetings.
Exactly. I mean, from our perspective, you know, we want to do two things. Number one, we want to engage the fan when they're actually in the stadium or that they're at home on their second screen. And this is, you know, a lot of fun, consumer-facing kind of Watsonized solution. But on the back end, how can we collect this data and see what fans are doing and then distribute it throughout an organization? It's funny, I was talking with an executive at one of the New York teams, and he put it rather bluntly, but I showed him the personality insights and showed him how you could track sentiment and keywords from social data, and he was amazed by this, and he said, you know, instead of marketing with a shotgun, I feel like I'm marketing with a sniper. And the idea there is that, you know, he's so much more specific and refined in how you can micro segment your audience, and for him it was a game changer for how he runs his business.
Well, yeah, that's great. All right, so the question about monetization, can you address that?
Absolutely. So for the ecosystem right now, we were in a scaling phase, and what we do is, and what my core job responsibility is to find the greatest companies and the most innovative companies who are working in the sports space, typically the earlier stage companies, usually around a Series A, Series B, although we have some that are smaller and larger. And what I do with them is I invite them to come in and use the APIs for free. Now, obviously, free is not something that IBM throws around very often, but our idea is that if they can come in and see the vision that we see and understand how they can use this technology and bring a product to market. If we can bring a product to market, that's where our commercial value is, because then we have a couple different tracks for how we monetize. Usually it's a revenue share system, so wherever they, whatever they build with Watson, we have a system where we can take a percentage of that. But we're also working on newer systems that are a little bit more flexible, working with some flat rate fees to just be able to use the technology and build for whatever purposes they want to create with.
Yeah, and Nick, let me just ask you quickly just to explain API. It's something that folks in the digital game know about, but just quickly explain what that means to everybody.
I didn't catch that, Tom. What did you say, API?
I'm sorry, yeah, just the API. So you said you're going to make our APIs available to these Series A early stage companies. Just explain what that means.
Perfect. So an API, the acronym itself stands for Application Programming Interface, which is a fancy way of saying a specific capability. So with Watson being a cognitive computer that understands natural language, what we did was we took the principles of natural language and made specific APIs. So we have APIs that can understand concepts. We have APIs that can recognize keywords and sentence structure. We have APIs that do sentiment, personality, and all these different capabilities fall under unstructured data. Some are more natural language focused than others. But the idea is that, you know, these specific capabilities can be used to create something larger. And that's something that I look for in the partners that I bring in, because, you know, each API by itself, you know, when they exist in isolation, they're only so powerful. I want partners to come in and say, hey, here's how I'm going to use this technology to make something much bigger. And if they can see that vision and use the technology to get there, then we can create something special with Watson.
Right. So that's actually a good segue to a question about which in the world of sports, which particular sports are best suited for this kind of deep dive into unstructured data analysis, in your opinion?
You know, I think about this a lot, and I think there's a couple ways you can answer this question. If I'm talking just in sports in general, I think esports is an unbelievable space, just because you're dealing with people who are not the experts. I coach a 10-year-old baseball team up in Westchester, New York, and I'm dealing with parents who are very smart, brilliant people. They run companies, and when it comes to sports, they really have no idea. So to create a cognitive coach with Watson, to help Watson help these kids learn and understand the aspects of the game, I think that's fascinating. From a professional perspective, I think certain sports are more well-equipped just based on how they handle data. You know, if you look at a sport like baseball, which has a tradition of sabermetrics on the performance side, I think baseball is extremely well positioned to use Watson, because, you know, you're also dealing with a fan base that's getting a lot older. And with that fan base, you need to figure out how to engage fans with technology. And when you have 162 games to do that, it becomes very difficult. So baseball is a great sport. I think that the NBA and the work they're doing is unbelievable. And then a sport like soccer, which is up and coming, you know, seeing all the technology that they're implementing with some of their new stadiums and the fan engagement experiences they have in their digital, it's unbelievable. It's funny, a sport like football, I've stayed away from initially just because, you know, they're very old school when it comes to analytics and are just starting to embrace it on the performance side. And I think football, in their mind, you know, they think they don't need the help just because they're doing so well in terms of the ratings and the numbers. But I think pretty soon they're going to recognize the need to engage fans in a different way. You look at things like VR and some of the new stadiums that are being built. It's going to get there, but I think football, you know, they're very happy with how they're doing right now.
Nick, I'm intrigued about by your answer, starting your answer with youth sports. I think probably a lot of people would be hearing you answer that way. That's really fascinating to me. So paint us a picture of a kind of a use case where this could work in youth sports, like, you know, that from the technology down to the interface for the consumer, for the parents, the aforementioned parents.
Absolutely. I'll start off by saying that the average household spends 10.5% of their annual salary combined on youth sports. So it's an incredible market. And from a use case perspective, it's funny, I actually signed a company pretty recently that works at both the youth level and the college level and the professional level. And what they have a wearable device. It's a baseball sleeve. And there's a wearable that goes in by the elbow and it tracks things like your arm velocity, the stress on the arm, arm angle, all these different metrics, which are great if you know baseball. But the problem is, you know, if you're a parent of a 10-year-old kid and your son or daughter is complaining about arm problems, you might not know what to do. So what we've done is we've created a next-level interaction with Watson. And we were training Watson on all the data related to pitching, the mechanics of pitching, different videos that it can recommend, physical therapy exercises. So if a parent does have a question, they can ask Watson, and Watson's built on this corpus of knowledge and has an expertise in this domain, and it can answer back with something very specific. So that's a way that, you know, if you're thinking about injury prevention or just performance in general, how you can help a parent, help a young kid get better at that sport.
When you say you can ask Watson, I want to just go one level deeper on that. So what is the actual, what's the interface? What's the manifestation of that software for that parent to actually?
Yeah, so it can be an app. I know for in this instance it is a mobile app, and they can text or they can actually speak into it. We have a speech-to-text API that can handle some of those queries. But, you know, if they're asking questions like, hey, my son or daughter, their arm is experiencing pain by the elbow, what are some great physical therapy exercises that they can do? And Watson will understand the intent of the question. Hopefully within that corpus it will have the information that is necessary to provide a personalized response.
Yeah.
So Nick, a couple questions on kind of the business marketing side. So IBM has had long-term successful relationships with groups like the USTA and the US Open. How does Watson kind of evolve into that sponsorship marketing platform? Is it kind of a standalone a la carte service that you would offer to partners? Is it kind of an evolving thing where this is kind of the next level of what IBM will provide? Is it a separate deal? And then the other piece, when you go back to look at partners, who are some of the partners who have come to you and said, man, we want to be involved with Watson. We already want to announce these things, and we want to figure out how we can be in from the ground floor and grow, who may not have been partners all along?
That's a great question. So I'll start with the first piece there with the sponsorships that we already have. And it's funny, I actually work pretty closely with our sponsorship department, because at this point, what we really want to see is how can we put Watson in the hands of an actual person? And this is what's funny about Watson is it's becoming a ubiquitous global brand. And, you know, as many people might know about Watson, very few people have actually interacted with Watson. You know, IBM's been this business that's been B2B, B2B2C. And now this is changing a little bit. Now with something like sports and wellness, which are so accessible on a consumer level, we can actually put Watson in the hands of these people and have them interact with it on a daily basis. So when you think about the U.S. Open, to be able to provide a Watson interface where they can interact and ask questions about Serena Williams or the history of tennis or types of shots, to the point where it can analyze the personality of the fans within that stadium and provide personalized content. These are all ways we're trying to up the adoption and just get people familiar with the idea that they can actually themselves utilize Watson effectively. To your second question about some of the partnerships and people and companies who are coming to us with ideas, I think Under Armour is a great example of that. Under Armour started out obviously as a textile company building and manufacturing clothing for athletes, and now I think they consider themselves more of a startup that's working in tech, just because of all the applications that they have that are monitoring fitness and wellness. And they came to us and said, how can we leverage Watson and the unstructured data and even some of the structured data technologies that IBM has and create something that is very holistic when it comes to training? So if you can think about, you know, building Watson's empty brain full of nutrition, sleep data, types of exercises, flexibility, all these things are going into Watson and helping analyze it and make use of some of those metrics that you're getting from wearables. You know, if you had told me, you know, 5 years ago that Under Armour and IBM were going to team up on this, I would have thought you were crazy. But I think this is sort of the next generation of how we can bring Watson to an actual consumer.
I know Kevin Plank calls Under Armour a tech company at this point, and they've invested close to $750 million in technology companies. So it sounds like a good partnership.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how the app comes out.
Sorry, Joe, I interrupted you.
So does Watson sit on top of a wearable or a chip like Zebra? And you mentioned the sleeve. So in the sleeve is some kind of chip or technology built by another technology company or a third party. Does Watson sit on top of that and continue to analyze from various areas, or is it actually usurping that partnership in various ways? So you become kind of the holistic piece that would actually go into creating something that is in the wearable.
That's a phenomenal question. I think for the most part right now, at least, Watson is existing as an extra layer of interaction, just because, Watson's bread and butter is not necessarily analyzing the structured data. We want to let our partners handle that with their wearables. We're just going to provide that interaction that didn't exist before to help make people better. And that's really, the issue when you see with the wearable market right now. I mean, you look at a company like Fitbit, which is tracking all this data, and I know many people who don't even use their Fitbits anymore because it doesn't actually lead to anything actionable. So if we can provide something with Watson that can help someone and answer specific questions to help make that more actionable, that's where we really want to be, because at the end of the day, we don't want Watson telling someone what to do. We want the human to drive that experience. We just want Watson to provide all the relevant data and expertise that human might not have.
Great. So, by the way, for the record, my Fitbit right now is saying that I've gone over 20,000 steps in Las Vegas the last 2 days, so I'm very proud of what I've done. And it beats
Wow.
my 10,000. That's the most important thing that Fitbit brings me.
That's right, because you can't find a cab. There's so much going on there. Nick, what are some specific examples right now? So if listeners wanted to check this out in actual practice, are there apps out there that they can get right now to get a sense of this?
Yeah, there's definitely some apps. Some of my sport partners, most of them are currently in development, so I can't talk about them specifically. But mm-hmm. there's some interesting partnerships out there that are doing some things with Watson on the retail side, on the social side. I know one in particular, Stat Social, which is looking at the personality and sentiment and interest from fans and their social data. And they're taking this data and then selling it back to brands to allow them to engage their customers differently. That's a great example of that. And there's some examples of that on their website, I believe. But if anyone wanted to just see some of the real world applications for what someone could build with the Watson technology, if they just went on Google and typed in Watson services or Watson app gallery, you can see all of those demos on there and specifically see how it can be put into practice. I know there's a couple things on there for politics and showing the sentiment of Donald Trump and some of these other politicians out there,
right,
which is really engaging, but it's showing how you can use this technology and pretty quickly create a real-world prototype for something that is cognitive.
Is it fair to say that IBM's role in this will be as a B2B provider, but the actual applications, the manifestations of this technology will be through like B2B to C, like the companies you just named and others in the future, including some in sports or some bigger ones in sports?
I would 100% agree. I think we can't accomplish this goal without our partners that we have. I mean, I think I've got the best job in the world because I'm speaking with companies and wellness companies, and I'm allowing them to do great things just because I know we can't necessarily do it ourselves because we don't have that kind of access. I mean, when you look at some of the exposure that the teams have, the teams necessarily don't want to work with some of the bigger companies because they're getting free pilots and startups who are coming to them with innovative, very niche ideas. And if I can mm-hmm. empower those startups with cognitive technology and make that technology exist for professional teams and eventually that fan in the stadium or at home, then I've done my job.
Yeah, with the profile of IBM, the big IBM, the big and vaunted IBM, and then the IBM Watson ecosystem on top of that, you must have a lot of interested parties. So I'm curious to know, you're doing a lot of business development. What percentage of your business development is inbound calls versus outbound hunting?
That's a great question. I think in the beginning it was probably 95% was outbound cold email. Now with some of the announcements that we made with Under Armour, with Toronto Raptors, I'd say it's probably closer to 30% inbound. And compared to some of my other colleagues, when it comes to cold emails, I mean, 75% of my cold emails come back positive, which I think is phenomenal. Obviously,
yeah,
the IBM Watson brand.
You're very lucky.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's anything that's said that I'm doing in particular. I just think I'm here at the right place in the right time. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys how much sports tech is just exploding onto the scene here. And I think there's an appetite for it.
Yeah, that's great. You're in a good place. Go ahead, Joe.
So when you say people know about it, and again, this is, you never know how these things kind of fit in, but how much of that would you say is a just a response from some of the great work that you've done? And how much of that is, hey, I saw an ad on X, Y, and Z game, and boy, I'm a sales guy, or I'm a marketing guy, or I'm a team guy. I better get on this and call somebody at IBM Watson before my boss says, why the hell aren't you involved in this already?
Yeah, that's good. I think it's probably, you know, an even 50-50 split, because even on some of the cold emails that I put out, when I end up speaking with the companies, they end up saying, you know, hey, we've been considering this for a while. We didn't know who the right person was. And that's the funny thing about it, is because when I first joined IBM, the sports vertical didn't exist. And I found that kind of shocking, because you know, coming from a college baseball background, being a personal trainer, coaching, I knew the market was there, but we didn't have anybody who necessarily was the expert to drive that. And then once I put myself out there and started networking with people like Tom and some of the sports tech newsletters and social media out there, then people started coming through the woodwork saying, hey, I've been waiting for the guy like you. Now let's talk about how we can build something with Watson.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Tom, I have one more question. And then
I'll finish up with that. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Nick, when you go back to talk about the youth market, how does Watson, from a sports perspective, if it does, fit into things like STEM, like science, technology, education, and math, and getting kids involved, you know, using sports as a great platform, and sports analytics probably is a great platform to be involved with science and technology and math, and even, you know, things like robotics, which are now becoming very competitive. Is there a fit for both sides of that, and is that part of the strategy?
I hope it does become part of the strategy, to be honest. I think that, you know, just the fact that kids are learning to code at such a young age, I mean, we're going to grow up in an age where, you know, people are going to be coding in kindergarten, and I know there's opportunities for them to do that right now. I think that Watson is the first step in that direction, and I know with our university program that we're engaging computer science majors and the professors at those universities to build themselves. I know I spoke to a university recently that wanted to leverage their computer science department and some of their best students to create an app for their sports team and their football team for the recruiting. So to see kids and see young people become accustomed to cognitive computing and understand the value of some of these more scientific and technology advancements, I think Watson is going to play a huge role in that.
That's great. We've got time for one more quick question, literally about a minute left. Nick, we'd love to know how you keep up with everything. How do you stay on top of this industry? What are you doing every day to keep informed?
Well, if I could call you every day, I would, but I know you're pretty
well,
busy.
Thank you.
I do a couple things. Number one, I did a lot of networking within the sports tech media industry. So I became friends with the CEOs and founders of Sport Techie and Hashtag Sport. They've been tremendous to me, just because whenever I travel somewhere or wherever, you know, something happens, they're the first person to tell me and are willing to make an introduction. So that definitely helps. I also reach out to a lot of the accelerators and VC firms who have an emphasis on sports, just because, you know, although they might have a cohort or a portfolio of only 10 companies, they're reviewing over, you know, 100 companies a year when they're bringing in their next cohort and their next grouping. So they really have a good idea of what that industry looks like. And then, you know, believe it or not, Twitter has been huge for me. I've actually signed 2 or 3 companies right now just from Twitter by being in the right groups and making good posts and just putting myself out there and trying to find out as much of this news as possible, because it's moving so quickly right now that if you're not up to date on your social media, you're going to fall behind.
That's a great answer, especially the part about Twitter. I really like that. And also your point about getting in with the good bloggers and kind of curators, like the Sports Tech is fabulous. Hashtag Sports Guys are really nice. So that's terrific. So let me thank you on behalf of Columbia and the sports program. And hope to see you back in the classroom soon so we can get even deeper into this again with some students listening. And Joe, stay safe in Vegas. And remember, what happens in Vegas these days doesn't stay in Vegas. It goes on to social media. So be smart all weekend. All
right,
thanks, guys.
One other thing. Right. Let's do this one more quick thing. Nick, how do we find you?
I'm sorry. That's a great question. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, if you need to find me, you can get me on Twitter at CutsyKid3 or shoot me an email at nicholas.katsumpis@us.ibm.com.
That's great, Nick. Well, thank you again. I actually want to mention one more thing, Joe, to our audience. We've got a New York Venture Community Sports event coming up in a couple of weeks. So I want to get on everybody's radar screen. The NYVC Sports Group will be reconvening March 21st. The topic will be gambling. Details will be coming out shortly. For those of you who are registered, you'll be notified of this. If you're not registered, you can go to nyvcsports.com, put in your email, and you'll be notified about the details of that event. And Nick, hopefully maybe we'll see you there. If not, we'll see you in the city soon. Thanks very much, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show. That's the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson. My co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student James Appel. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and on other key platforms. You can also see it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CU Sports Biz, that's BIZ. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you.